Okay, we're beginning with the Mishnah on the bottom of Ayin Chedom Bet. Nitkavin Narogata Beima, person intending to kill an animal, by Ragata Adam. Instead of killing Beima, he ends up killing an individual. Le Oveid Kochavim, a non-Jew, by Ragat Yisroel, and instead he killed a Jew. Le Nifelim, he was intending for a fetus, by Ragata Ben Kayama. And he ended up killing someone who was already alive. Patur. In all of these cases, you are patur. Rashi over here says that the reason behind the position here in the Mishnah is, Mishum Tchi Achube Hatrat Safeku. Because when you warn him, it's always a Safek. Afa Pishi Kibel Alav Hatra. Even if he accepts the Hatra, the intended victim is not what you're warning him about. And there's Hatrat Safek. Even if both people are there, even there's a possibility of him injuring, killing both individuals, still doesn't matter, it's Hatrat Safek, because there's no certainty. Shomer Lehem, Yodani Ishu Ben Berit. He says, I know that this guy's Jewish. Valmanakin and Yosef. Shimer Agenu, Aniya Chayev Mitah. And even if I kill him, I'll be Chayev Mitah. The Shema Lo Yargenu. You have no idea if he's going to hit this person. The person says, if you be careful, they're in tight range of each other, in close range of each other, you might kill him. That's still a might, and that makes it into Hatrat Safek. Rashi follows this through the entire Mishnah and into the Gemara. He thinks that the sugya here deals with Hatrat Safek. Whether you are successful at giving Hatra or not successful at giving Hatra, that's the issue of the Mishnah. Other Rishonim, the majority of Rishonim, believe that the issue of the Mishnah is what we call transference of intent. When you have intent, can we transfer that onto someone else? If a person intends to murder, does it merely matter who the victim is in the end? If they intend to murder, do we take that intent for the individual and then transfer it over to the victim that they end up killing? They intended to kill, may not have been that victim, but in the end they did kill. Can you transfer the intent from the first to the other? And that's the discussion in the Mishnah according to the other Rishonim, which is over here, the person intended for an animal ends up killing a human being, we don't transfer the intent. So that's the way that the other Rishonim explain why you are patur. Itkavin lakuto al motnav, intended to hit him on his loins and his hips, laya bakide la mito al motnav. If he hits him there, it will not kill him because the blow is not sufficient. Instead, he hit him in the chest or hit him where the heart was. And if he hit him on the heart, that would be a strong enough blow to be lethal. Umeit, and he dies patur. Again, the question of when he hits in one location, which is not a fatal blow, but instead of hitting there, it ends up on a location where it is a fatal blow. According to Rashi, Hatrat Safek. According to the other Rishonim, transference of intent, can you have that here? It's kavin lakuto alibo, vaya badakdeya deyamit, talibo. It would have intended to hit him on the heart, and it would have been lethal enough to kill him there. V'halchalav modnav. And instead, it hit him on the hips or on the loins, v'loya badakdeya amit al modnav. But there, it would not have been successful, it was not strong enough to kill him. Umeit, and he dies nevertheless, patur. Again, because we don't transfer the intent of the lethal blow, plus in the location where he hit, it was not a lethal blow. It's kavin lakotet ha-gadol, v'lo yabak kedei lamitet ha-gadol. He intended to hit someone who was of age, someone who was older, and that type of blow would not have killed someone of that age. V'alchal ala katan. But he ended up hitting someone who was much smaller, a child. And that did have the ability to kill the katan, umeit, and he dies patur, again, because he didn't have intent for a lethal blow. It's kavin lakotet katan, he put a blow on a minor or a young child that would have been sufficient to kill the child, but instead he hit someone who was more mature, was older, was bigger, and that type of blow would not normally have killed someone of that age or that size. Umeit. But nevertheless, he did die. Patur. Again, patur. Aval. It's kavin lakot al motnav. Vaya bakidei lamit al motnav. If he intended to hit him on the loins, the hip, and the blow was sufficiently strong to be lethal. Vahalchal al libo. And instead he hit the heart. Umeit. And he dies from that blow. Chayav. So even though its intent wasn't carried out in terms of where the location of the blow happened, nevertheless, the blow was a death blow. And now it becomes irrelevant whether he hits him in the location that he intended, where it would have caused death, or he hits him somewhere else, then it causes death. In both locations, it was sufficiently strong to kill him. That was his intent. The victim is the victim that he intended to kill. That's enough intent in order to make you chayav. It's kaven akote tagadol, vayaba kedei lamita tagadol, intended to kill an individual who was larger, older, and it was a sufficiently strong blow to be lethal to that individual. Vachalala katan. Instead, he ends up hitting a minor, a younger child, umate, and he dies. Obviously, the blow is sufficiently lethal for the younger one. Chayav. Again, there he is chayav, because his intended blow was a blow that would have been fatal. It was towards an individual, and just because another individual got in the way or was hit, nevertheless, he's considered to be a murderer in that case. Here we see transference of intent. In the previous cases, there was a deficit in the blow, because the intended blow would not have been lethal to the human being or to a Ben Israel. And then it ends up hitting the individual in a place that it would have been lethal. There we do not say this transference intent. Or, according to Rashi, there we say it's a safek hatra'ah because we don't have certainty about the fact that he's going to kill. On the other hand, here in these latter two cases, we say that the blow was an intended blow that would have killed. And so therefore, the transference intent is much easier here. He was going to kill. Only question was, who is he going to kill? Or, he was going to kill, and the only question is where on the person he's going to kill them. Over there we see that it's being sufficiently intentional to be considered murder, and he will be chayav in those instances. According to Rashi, it's already considered to be enough to be vadai hatra'ah. As Rashi says over here, the tarte ba'inan. We need two things. Shehei mitzkavein, the makat mita. He has to intend for a lethal blow. Vishiyakenu makat mita, and then he actually hits him with a lethal blow. In each of these latter two cases, that's what you have. You have an intended lethal blow, and there was a lethal blow in the end. So you've covered both of those bases, and that's why you're going to be chayav. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu nitzkavein naroket ze, varaket ze, patur. Even if he intended to kill one and kill the other, then you are patur. So the Gemara will discuss in 1 second what Rabbi Shimon is referencing to, but Rabbi Shimon clearly thinks that intent is just as important as to whether there is a lethal blow and whether you gave a lethal blow. The intended victim is just as important. And this is Rabbi Shimon, the Shitato. We know Rabbi Shimon all over Shas says that Davar Sheino Mitkavein is mutar. In some instances, it's patur. Not only in Shabbat, where there's Melechet Makshevet, but the Gemara shows applications of that even outside of Dinei Shabbat. And so Rabbi Shimon, who we know many places in Shas, is very focused on Kavanah, intent over here as well, sees intent as being important here in the describing of intent. For a person to be a murderer, the Kavanah, or the original intent, is very important over here. All right, so now the Gemara asks, Rabbi Shimon, ahai. What is Rabbi Shimon referring to in the Mishnah? Meaning that, what is he modifying? He's arguing on the Tanakhama, that's clear. Question is, which statement of the Tanakhama is he arguing on? Ilema Seifa. So the easiest thing to suggest is in the latter two cases where the Tanakhama said Chayav, then Rabbi Shimon says Patur. Rabbi Shimon Poter mi Baile. Then the way it should have been worded in the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon Poter. That's not the language that's used in the Mishnah. Ella. The language that is used is Rabbi Shimon Omer Afilu. That's not something that seems like he's referencing to the immediate statement before. If it was the immediate statement before, you would say, Tanakhama says Chayav, Rabbi Shimon Poter. That would be clear that he is referencing to this statement before, or he's trying to argue on that statement. The way that Rabbi Shimon is phrased, it sounds like he's making a bigger statement than that, or he's arguing on something else. That's what Gemara says, El Aresha. It's going on the earlier part of the Mishnah. Nitkaven erog et abema v'ragit adam. He intended to kill an animal, and instead he killed a person. Lo v'kuchavim v'ragit Yisrael, non-Jew, and kills a Jew. L'nif feilim, a fetus, v'ragit ben kayama, and instead killed a live individual. Patur. But the deal that you would get from here is, ha nitkaven erog et ze, v'ragit ze, chayav. The deal out of that would be, if you intended for one victim, and instead it was another victim, there you would be chayav according to the Tanakhama. And that's actually borne out later by the Mishnah itself, where it says in that instance where he intends to give a fatal blow to a gadol and ends up hitting a katan and killing him, then you are chayav. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu nitkaven roget zeh v'raget zeh, even if you intend to kill one victim and kill another victim, patur. That individual is patur. Anitkavein Naroget Zeh. Rashi claims over there, Behitru Bo'alav, and Eivim Hatra'ah, Tachrat Vadayu. There it is considered to be a Hatrat Vadayu, by Raget Zeh Chayav. Dik Hatra'ah of Ben Brit. Because you gave a Hatra'ah on a Jew in general. So this again goes to Rashi's view of the Mishnah, that the difference in opinion here revolves around Hatra'ah. The Tanakhama thinks that when you give a Hatra'ah to kill a Jew, that's enough. You don't have to specifically name the victim. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says you have to name the particular victim that he thinks he's going to kill. And if you're wrong about the victim, then the Hatra'ah doesn't work. That'll be the Machloket. According to the other Rishonim, it's the question of transference of intent. In cases where the intended victim is of the same nature or the same type or the same category, then in that instance, transference intent will work. We'll say that basically what you intended to happen, happened. Happened not to be the exact victim, but however you intended to murder a Gadol who was a Jew, so you ended up killing that type of person, that type of fatal blow, that's enough for transference of intent. According to Rabbi Shimon, that's not enough for transference of intent, because the difference between the two victims already makes it that your intent wasn't carried out. To sharpen the distinction between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, or the Tanakhama, is this issue of how far do we take intent? How intentional does the act have to be? Does it just have to be an intentional act? Or does it be an intentional act that has a particular outcome, which is the victim is involved? And Rabbi Shimon requires that additional intent, which again is Shitat Rabbi Shimon all over Shas, that Kavanah means not only Kavanah for the action, but also Kavanah for the intended outcome or result that you get. All right, so now Gemara says, Pshita, straightforward, Kai Ruvain v'Shimon. Ruvain and Shimon are standing next to each other. V'amar ana l'Ruvain kamikavna. The Shimon lo mikavna. The person says, I intend to kill Ruvain, but I don't intend to kill Shimon. Hainu plutayu. That's exactly the machok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. Over here, the person is giving a lethal blow that is intended for a particular victim. The victim turns out to be someone that he did not intend for. Do we say that that's Hatrat Vadai? Do we say that that's transference intent? Chachamim say yes to both of those. And therefore you're Chayav. Rabbi Shimon says no to both of those, and therefore you are Patur. Amar lechad minayu, mai. He says, I'm intending for one of you two, what's the din? Inami kasova Ruvain, v'nimsa Shimon, mai. Or, in an instance where he thought it was Ruvain, but it turns out to be Shimon. So in both those cases, the intended victim turns out to be what he intended for. In one case, he says, either or is good enough for me, so I don't mind if I kill either one of them. Is that enough of intent? Is that enough directed intent to say that even Rabbi Shimon be mechayev there? Or in the case where the intended victim was who he kills, turns out just to be someone else. He thought it was someone, it turns out to be someone else. But his intended victim is the person that he kills. Is that enough intent for Rabbi Shimon? Tashma, Titanio, we have a braita where Rabbi Shimon is more explicit about his position, and that is Rabbi Shimon Omer, Achi Omar Leploni Ani Mitkavein. That it must be specific intent for the specific individual. So that means it's not good enough to say one or the other. You have to have specific intent. And it's also not good enough that you say that was your intended victim, but it turns out it was someone who you didn't think. And this must be Ploni. It must be so-and-so that you're intending to kill. So Rabbi Shimon requires full intent. Everything has to be exactly the way the person had anticipated and exactly what he intended to do. Otherwise, it's not considered to be murder. My time at Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Amar Kra, Varav lo v'kam alav. So the pasuk in Devarim, describing about murder and the galut over there, had what Rashi terms as extraneous words in the pasuk, because you could have just written, ki yeh ish soneh l'reihu v'kam alav. Why do you have to say Varav lo? He was in waiting for him. He was looking to ambush him. What does that add for you in the pasuk? So ad shid kavein lo. So that's the arav lo comes to teach you that there must be specific intent for the individual, specific intent for this particular victim, and the victim has to be the one that you intended to wait for or intended to kill. Arav lo is an indication of very strong intention. Rabbanan amrei debei Rabbi Yanai prat v'zareik even the go. So the Rabbanan say that the Varav Lo says you have to have specific intent for the victim or a victim, as opposed to in a situation in which you throw a stone into a crowd. throw a stone into the crowd, don't know who the stone's going to kill, although you do know that the stone will kill somebody in the crowd. So then, Heichi Dami. Gemara wants to know, what exactly is the setup in this crowd that you're saying that he would be patur in that case? If you think that there are 9 kutim and 1 Jew, you could just simply say you don't need the pasuk to tell you that he's going to be patur here. He's going to be patur because the rove are people that he would not be subject to an execution or mitzvah for. Just for that reason, he should be patur. You don't need Varav Lo to teach you that. You're just patur because it's the rove. And we have a general principle of Itzilu Aida, that whenever we have a safek and nefashot, we go the kula, meaning that we don't prosecute or we're not going to execute the individual. So over here, where he throws it into a crowd, where the majority are people that he's not going to be chayav for, we're going to assume that he's patur. Inami, palgo, palgo. Even if you want to suggest that it was 50-50, safek nefashot lehakel. In that instance, we're going to go safek nefashot lehakel. Even if you don't have a rove, even if it's 50-50, we don't know. And since we don't know, we've got to assume and give him the benefit of the doubt in these situations. So therefore, you wouldn't need the pasuk to tell me that he is patur. Lo tzricha deika tisha Yisrael v'kutei achad b'neem. It's a situation in which there are 9 Jews and 1 non-Jew in the group. You would have thought, in that situation, the majority should rule. Since the majority are Jewish victims, then the person should be held culpable for murder in that situation, because we'll go after the rove by nefashot. We already saw that in the beginning of Ben Sorer Moreh. So if you invoke the rove here, the person should be considered culpable for throwing a stone into that group. But we have a principle that derives from here. It's a principle throughout Shas, and that is Davalei Kuti Kavua. The Kuti is considered to be Kavua. Bechol Kavua Kemeksa Amexa Dami. And when you have things that are fixed in place, then we deem them to be 50-50. Right? This is a principle that comes up in many areas of halacha. That is, v'chol de parish, anything that separates from a group, miruba parish, it separates from the majority. We look statistically or probability-wise that if you have an object that came from a grouping, we're going to look at the probabilities, the statistical evidence, which would indicate that whatever separates from the group likely came from the majority. And therefore, we'll assume that it came from the majority. On the other hand, when you have a fixed group in which nobody is separating from the group, then we don't look at this as a statistical probability anymore. We look at this as being fixed in place. And since it's fixed in place, everything fixed in place means that the odds are automatically 50-50. Even though, technically, if you look at the situation, you would say that it's a rove. But since we are not taking a sample away from the group, we don't look at the statistics, we don't look at the probability. Since you're looking at the group has 2 items in it, that makes it a 50-50 shot that you can hit one of those items. The truth is that the Chanan Wasserman, the Kobet Shiurim, in the end, when dealing with trying to understand the logic of this, basically says that it's a gzeirat hakatuv, because the probability should be equal. Whether you're putting a sample away from the group, or you look at the group, the probability should be the same. So the Torah has a principle that when it is a fixed safek, then we say that it's 50 and 50. Now Rashi goes out of his way to explain why that is the case over here. Because he says that you can't indicate that kavua is like rove, because all you have to do here is reach a point where the individual will be patur. As we already determined before, if it was rove kuti, he would definitely be patur. But then we said palgo palgo. Even if it's 50-50, he'd also be patur, because safek nefashot lehakel. And so Rashi says, then when the posel comes and tells you you're patur, when it's kavua, because it's mechsa mechsa, why is it only mechsa mechsa? Because mechsa mechsa is enough to make you patur. And if the pasuk is telling you patur, then we move to the least chiddush that makes you patur. What's the least chiddush that makes you patur? A case of 50-50. And that means that we're going to deem a case of kavua 50-50, like a equal probability of hitting either party. So in that case, had it not been for the din that is brought in the pasuk, we would have thought you're chayav. We would have gotten over the robe. The robe would dictate you're going to hit Israel. And since you're going to hit Israel, you're going to be chayav. But along comes the principle that comes from a Rav Lo and teaches you that when you throw a stone in such a group, it's considered to be 50-50. And we just saw before in the Gemara, when it's 50-50, safek nefashot le'akel. and therefore we're not going to prosecute. And as Rashi notes over here, this is the story. This is the source, this is the paradigm throughout Shas for this principle that is established. Tosafot now goes back and tries to deal with the Hatrat Safek issue, which is Tema. Aliba demandika masikachi, aliba demand amar, hatrat safek, lav shma hatra. According to one who says that hatrat safek is not hatra, but lav time it is safek nifashot akel, patrinin le. In the case of palgo, 50-50, you should make it patur, irrespective of the hatrat safek. Mitama de lav shma hatra. It's not called hatra. And in the case of 50-50, it has nothing to do with safek nifashot akel, it's the fact that you can't give hatra, because your hatra by definition will be a safek. And the other way around, if it's a person who thinks that the Hatra Safek is Shmei Hatra, how can you make him patur if in the end it is a Jew that he kills? If you say such a Hatra is a valid Hatra, then if in the end he killed a Jew, it doesn't matter what the statistics were, the probability, if that's good enough Hatra, then he should be put to death. Tell us what it says over here. V'yesh lamar, the shiny hotam, sheyodeya bibarur, sheyavo lidei vaday yisur, im yotir o im yakesh shneihem. The case where we say that Hatrat Safek is Shma Hatra'ah is in a case where no matter what the outcome is, you will end up doing something wrong. The only question is, what are you doing wrong? Who are you affecting? But no matter what, the outcome of the situation will be something wrong. Shemachi Shma Hatra'ah. That's why the person who believes Hatrat Safek Shma Hatra'ah is because no matter which way you go, irrespective of the outcome, you're going to be violating any sort. We just don't know either which Isur, or we don't know which victim, but either way, we know that there is going to be something wrong that's done over here. Avahacha, in our situation, Bezarek given the go, when you throw a stone into a group, you don't know if you're going to end up with doing something that is resulting in classification of murder, or resulting in a violation of Isur. So because you don't know who it's going to hit, you don't know where it's going to land. That already is Hatrat Safek, that even the person who thinks Hatrat Safek Shma Hatra can't get over. Here, Tosafot narrows the definition of what Hatrat Safek is and says Hatrat Safek is only Shmei Hatra'ah when no matter which outcome you would end up with an Isur. But if a situation where one outcome is an Isur or is going to end up with you being prosecuted, the other outcome will not end up that way, that's not called Hatra'ah, even according to one who says Safek Hatra'ah Shma Hatra'ah. Because there you can't say that it's a safek anymore. It's not a safek which violation. It's not a safek of which victim. It's a safek about whether you're even engaging in something that will end up producing a problem. And that type of safek is not Shema Hatra'ah. Tosfot learns that from what we're saying over here. Tosfot also then notes this idea that chol kavua kamexa mexa dami, mihacha naftralan b'chol duchte. This is the source, this is the paradigm for all of Shas. He says the only little problem now is Rabbi Shimon. If this is the paradigm, if this is the source for this Rav Shas, Rabbi Shimon used the word Arav Lo for a different drasha. He uses that for intent, that you need very specific intent. Where does he learn out this principle of Kol Kavua Kamexa Mexa Dami? If it's not logical, if it's not statistically sound, then the only way it works is that it's a Gzerata Katuv. If Rabbi Shimon doesn't have that Katuv, how does he overcome that problem? So Tosfot in the end says, V'yesh Lomar, V'yesh Lefaresh Rabbi Shimon B'tisha Yisraelim B'chad Kuti, he says, I'm intending for this particular individual, the miftar mitam kol kavua mi'arav lo. Because in that situation, because of arav lo, he's going to be patur, because of kavua. V'chi agavna im kulam Yisraelim chayav. But in that situation, if they were all Jews, he would be chayav. So he comes up with a sub-case within Rabbi Shimon's position of arav lo that will indicate to us that the mechs that kavua is kamechsa mechsa, rather than the real statistical probability of the group. So Rabbi Shimon will also have to learn it out for Rav Lo because it is such a paradigmatic concept. But anyway, going back to your question about what happened in Las Vegas, this is exactly the case. When a person's shooting into a crowd, then in that situation, if the victims in the crowd are people that they will be chayab for, then they, with Hatra'ah, if the person is Jewish, you would need Hatra'ah. Versus non-Jewish, is a Ben Noach, there's no need for Hatra'ah. They're shooting into a crowd of individuals, of victims who they would be chayab for, maybe for everyone, or even it's definitely a majority of individuals that they would be chayab for. In that case, they would be considered a murderer when they're shooting, even though they don't know the intended victim. The one exception to that would be Rabbi Shimon, who says you need to know who the intended victim is. But in that case, it's a gzeirat ha-katuv that comes out of the pasuk for Jews. That means that in a ben Noach, that may not have application over here because the ben Noach doesn't have the varav lo to tell you that you need specific intent. And so that may not govern their restriction of murder. And then in that case, even according to Rabbi Shimon, this Las Vegas shooter would be considered to be chayav. All right. Bishlam al rabbonon damrei. I understand according to Raman who say, nitkavin aroget zeh chayav. I understand their position. So this goes to the psukim that are found in Parshat Mishpatim. It says, v'chi anatzu anashim. Two guys are quarreling, they're fighting. V'nagfu isha hara. One of them goes to hit the other, and instead of hitting his friend, or his ex-friend, he ends up hitting a woman who is pregnant. V'yatzu yelada, and she miscarries. V'lo yeason. The woman is not a fatality in this case, means she's not killed by that blow. Then anoshi anesh. The court will determine what the quote-unquote monetary loss was over here, and he'll have to compensate the husband of this woman for the miscarriage, for the loss. But if there is a fatality, if the woman was killed over there, then you have to give a life for a life. That seems to indicate from the pasuk, you read the pashtura pasuk, that if a person intended to kill his friend, he was giving a lethal blow to his friend, he misses his friend and instead hits this pregnant woman and kills the woman. The pasuk says, "V'natata nefesh tacha nefesh," that that individual will be held accountable for murder, and then they will have to give up their life for the life that they took. So that's what the Gemara says here. According to the Rabbanu, was saying, "Nitzkaven aroget zeh v'aroget zeh chayav," that when you intend for one victim and end up getting another victim, you are chayav. Dichtiv, the Sukkim seem to support that. V'chi yinatzu anashim nagfu isha hara. V'amar Rabbi Elazar b'mitzvat shebemita katu midaber. We're talking about a situation in which the person is intending to give a death blow, a lethal blow to his friend. Dichtiv imatzoni yeh. Because the pasuk continues, the next pasuk, and says, if there's a fatality. V'natata nefesh tachet nefesh. Elo Rabbi Shimon. Hai v'natata nefesh tachet nefesh ma'avidei. What does he do with the fact that that seems to indicate that there's murder when you intend for one victim and end up killing another victim? Sounds like there's murder there. Mamo, he says, natata nefesh tacha nefesh is not that you will be held accountable for murder, but rather you're going to have to make compensation in that situation. Uche de Rabbi, like the position of Rabbi, Tatani Rabbi Omer, natata nefesh tacha nefesh, mamo. The pasuk says you'll give a life for a life. Doesn't literally mean a life like we thought before, like Rabbi Lazar stated, but rather it means that you have to make compensation. You have to pay kofar to the victim. So, atal mer mamon, oeno la nefesh mamash. How do you know that nefesh taka nefesh means monetary compensation and not real life for a life? V'nemar netina lamato, v'nemar netina lamalo. It says netina over here in this pasuk, and also says netina in the above pasuk. Which is, in the original pasuk, it says, "V'lo yason," when there isn't a fatality, "Anosh yanesh kasher shitala balisha v'natan biflilim." So then he has to give compensation. So now in the next pasuk, when it says, "V'maso yeh v'natata nefesh taka nefesh," so that v'natata is governed by the nitina of the above pasuk. Malahalan mamon, just like in that above pasuk, it was mamon. Afkan mamon, so too over here, v'natata nefesh taka nefesh, is also a giving of monetary compensation rather than the exchange of life, meaning that you're not deemed a murderer to be executed as a murderer, but rather you have to pay compensation in the form of kofar. Amar Rava, haitana debei chizkia, mafka midirabi, umafka midirabanan. This limud of the tana debei chizkia is a position that is against Rabbi and against the Rabbanan over here. In our situation, there are two possible outcomes to what the pasuk says. One outcome is that you are deemed a murderer, and you will be put on trial as a murderer, and you will lose your life if you are found guilty. That's the position of the Chachamim. Then there's Rabbi, or the Chachamim, or Rabbi Elazar. The position of Rabbi is, if you're brought to trial and found to be guilty in this case, you'll have to make compensation, kofar compensation. Tana de Beit Chizkiya is about to tell us that you will be chayav for nothing in this situation. Not as a murderer, and not as a monetary compensation. You'll be patur ligamre. So Vayikra Chavdalet, which we actually dealt with yesterday as well, these are the psukim that are found right after the case of the Megadeif at the end of Parshat Emor. So over there it has a little piece that deals with injury and murder. It says, Umakebe ma yishamenu. Someone who hits an animal, injures an animal, will have to make restitution compensation. Umake adam yumat. On the other hand, a person who hits another individual, we put to death. Obviously, from here, the word makeh means to kill. If one kills a behemah, then they compensate for the loss, the monetary loss. Makeh adam, person hits and kills a person, yamut. Then they will be put to death. Tosafot over here deals with whether what I'm saying is really true, because in some places we find that the drush of makeh behemah, or makeh adam over there, isn't necessarily a fatal blow. The Gemara in one place says that it's talking about makeh aviv, talking about hitting his father. Well, you don't need a death blow to be put up to yumat, to be put to death. All you need is to injure the father for that. The Tosafot tries to reconcile with what type of makeh we're speaking about over here. But leaving that aside, Tana de Beit Chizkiya learns from this. Makeh adam umakeh beima. The Pasuk discusses both a blow to a person and a blow to an animal. Ma makeh beima. Lo chilakta ben shugeg b'mezid ben mitkaven l'sheinu mitkaven. Ben derech yirida l'derech aliyah. In the case where you a blow towards an animal, there's no distinction as to whether it was an intentional blow, an unintentional blow. Whether it was done b'mitkaven or she'enu mitkaven, that was his intent, not his intent. Whether it was done in an upward motion, a downward motion, which has no meaning over here. It has meaning by galut, has no meaning in the case of beima. No matter what, you are chayav. All of those cases, the patro mamon, ela chayvo mamon, we made no such a distinction. We say that you're chayav mamon in all those cases because adam muad liolam. A person is always deemed to be a muad. So no matter what type of damage he does, he's responsible. No matter what the intent is, whether he knew about it or didn't know about it, you're responsible for your actions when you cause monetary damage. So there you see that there is no distinction made. Af makeh adam, so too by the blow to a person, lo tachlok bo ben shogeg demezid, ben mitkaven l'sheinu mitkaven. We won't differentiate between a case of unintentional or intentional, or whether you are intending for this particular item, or not intending for this particular item, or whether it is derech yirida or derech aliyah. We're going to see this when we get to the Gemara in Makot. When it comes to galut, that there is a differentiation between whether the person was killed derech yirida in a downward motion, or derech aliyah in an upward motion. You only chayav galut when it's in a downward motion, not in an upward motion. So that's what he's saying here. It makes no difference whether it's an upward motion or a downward motion. In all these cases, you will l'chayvo mamon, el patro mamon. You're not going to be chayav mamon, but rather be patur from mamon. So now this goes to what we know as kimlei derabamine. We know that in a case where a person is going to be subject to a death penalty, he doesn't make monetary compensation. So let's take, for example, a case where it's mezid and mitkaven. He is intending to kill, and is intending for the particular victim over here. He turns out to be a murderer. If he is found to be a murderer, he's patur from making any monetary compensation because of kimlei derabamine. What Tana de Beit Chizkiya says is, that position is not uniquely associated with mezid and mitkaven. It's associated with anything here. Just like by behemah, there's no differentiation in intent, direction, and all these different qualifications. You're chayav there. So too by death, it makes no difference how that came about. You will be patur for mamon. This is the source for the fact that throughout Shas we say that chayve mitot shogegin. If a person does something that would have resulted in him being put into galut, he only kills unintentionally as a shogeg, you still are not chayav to pay mamon. There is kimlei derabamine. And that's what Tana de Beit Chizkiya says. Is kimlei derabamine is an effect no matter what the circumstance is, no matter what the situation is. So now, Tosafot says here, throughout Shas, whenever you look, the source for the fact that mitat shogegim is patur is Tana de Beit Chizkiya. The Gemara says in many places, is there anybody who argues on that position? And the Gemara takes it for granted that nobody argues on this position of Tana de Beit Chizkiya. The only problem is, didn't just Rava just say that Tana de Beit Chizkiya disagrees with both Rabbi and the Chachamim over here? So there are people who disagree with Tana de Beit Chizkiya. So therefore, Tosafot says that You have to differentiate the case over here, and that the argument over here is about a very particular monetary payment. And that is, the question here is not about monetary compensation in general. Everybody agrees to Tanai Bei Chizkiah's position with regards to monetary compensation, that it's wiped out no matter what the situation is where there is a death involved. But they argue over here where the monetary payment is not just any compensation. It happens to be the Demei Neharag. It happens to be the kofar for the person who's getting killed. Maybe in that case, Kimlei D'Rabbi Minei should not apply. And that is the view of Rabbi, or the Chachamim would think you're a murderer. Obviously, it's not going to apply. But what they're suggesting is that you have to bifurcate monetary compensation. Certain monetary compensation, everybody agrees to this position, Tana de Beit Chizkiah, that it will not be paid. Certain monetary compensation is up for grabs here. And that's the question. When you have monetary compensation, it's specifically about the murder itself. It's not a derivative effect. It's not some sidebar to the murder where the guy broke a kli on the way there, he smashed something while he was killing, whatever it is that was a collateral damage to the murder, that's not what we're speaking about. We're speaking about specific compensation, which for the murder itself, does Kimlei D'Rabbi may wipe it out? According to Tana Bei Chizkiah, yes. According to Rabbi, no. And that's what it means that Rabbi and Tana Bei Chizkiah don't agree. But it does not mean that Rabbi disagrees fundamentally what the Tana Bei Chizkiah is saying over here, which is that in any case that a death is involved, money is off the table. There is no monetary compensation over there. Even though Tosafot then goes on to show that there are some brightot or Tanaim that argue on Tana Bei Chizkiah, nevertheless, he sets up a principle here, which is very interesting, and he says, Mikomakom to both Chashim brightot the Chizkiah ikar tfei. Even though there are other brightot that do bring some Tanaim that do disagree with Tana Bei Chizkiah, nevertheless, the Gemara assumes that Tana Bei Chizkiah is right, and everybody accepts it, because Mishum de Chizkiah brei de Rabbi Chiya. Chizkiah is Rabbi Chiya's son, Rishona brightot shel Aviv. We know that Rabbi was the Mesader HaMishnah. His two Talmidim, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya, were the Mesader HaBraitot. And their Braitot are considered to have a certain standing. If you bring a Braita into the Gemara, and it's not from the Braitot of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya, it already casts aspersions on the integrity of the Braita. Whereas if you bring a Braita from Chiya and Rabbi Shaya, those are considered to be good Braitot, and a Braita that you could ask questions from. So over here, Chizkiah, who's the son of Rabbi Chiya, is quoting a Braita, and that must be a Braita that was verified by his father or came from his father, and therefore carries a lot of weight in terms of the integrity of such a Braita, and that's why the Gemara favors heavily Tana Dei Chizkiah over any other Braita. So that's how Tosafot deals with it in the end, but what's more interesting is his earlier statement, which is, even Rabbi over here accepts Tana Dei Chizkiah, with the exception of Kofar, which is the case over here. So now, in terms of disagreeing, we see here that in a case where there's a fatality, here the woman, then Tana Dei Chizkiah says you're patur from Mamon. Rabbi says you're Chayav Mamon, the Rabbanan say you are Chayav Mita. Clearly, Tana Dei Chizkiah disagrees with Rabbi because he thinks you're patur from Mamon, but he also clearly disagrees with the Chachamim. Maisha Enu Mitkavein. What is the case of Enu Mitkavein over here? Ilei Moshe Mitkavein Klau. If you say that it was unintentional, Hainu Shogeg. It seems like the bright over here had a duplication. It said Shogeg Mezid, and it said Enu Mitkavein and Mitkavein. Shogeg and Mezid are basically Enu Mitkavein and Mitkavein. Usually when a bright lists things like this, it says Shogeg Mezid, and then it says Ones and Ratzon. It uses a different category in order to separate them. But that's not what it did over here. Over here it says Shogeg Mezid, Ein mitkavein u mitkavein. Seems like a complete duplication. Ela pshita, she'ein mitkavein lezeh, ela lezeh. So what you see from here is that the ein mitkavein can't be read as being shogeg, because that's already listed. So it must be another type of ein u mitkavein. What's that? That's ein u mitkavein lezeh. He didn't intend for this victim, and intended for another victim. Viktani lechaibo mamon, or lepatro mamon. And Tana Bei Chizkiah says, you are patur from mamon in that case. Vibakar katalu, ma'yistrech lemifterei. If you think like the Chachamim that he's a murderer, then you don't need Tana Dei Chizkiah to tell you that he's patur, because that's Kimlei D'Rabbi Minei. That's the classic case of Kimlei D'Rabbi Minei, where the person's going to be put to death, that he has to make monetary compensation. Ela lav shmamina, lav bar katolahu, v'lav bar mamonu. So from Tana Dei Chizkiah, you see that he's not considered a murderer, and he's also not considered a person that has to make compensation. And that's what Rava said before. Tana Dei Chizkiah clearly disagrees with the position of Rabbi and the Chachamim, Rabbi and Rabbi Elazar. Tosfot over here, it says, Ben Shogeg Mezid, says that there are actually three principles that are established by Tana Dei Chizkiah over here. It says, that says you are patur. Ben shogeg the mezid mairi, v'mamon acher v'hadei mita. Ben shogeg the mezid means whether there's other money involved with this mita. In that the death also had collateral damage, or he did a theft at the same time, whatever it is, he did damage at the same time, that is one of the issues that Tana de Beit Chizkiya is addressing. And that teaches you that even a person who unintentionally kills will still be patur from monetary compensation, even though there's no quote-unquote kimle deraba mine, because he's not going to be put to death. Nevertheless, it's still applied by mita chogigin. That's one principle. He says, and if Tosfot said in the previous amud, everybody agrees to this position of Tana de Beit Chizkiya. Aval, ben mitkaven she'enu mitkaven, the case of mitkaven and enu mitkaven, which is what we just discussed now, where he intends for one victim and hits another victim, v'hadei mita ayre. We're not speaking about collateral damage. We're speaking about money or compensation that deals with that specific event. And he says, you are patur from kofar, to the exclusion of Rabbi's position, who thinks you are chayav kofar. So that's the second din that arises from Tana de Beit Chizkiya. The first one is collateral damage, or collateral monetary obligations are wiped out, and that's even in cases of shogeg, not just in mezid. Everybody agrees to that. The second principle is, even when you're talking about kofar, you're off the hook, because that's nitkaven zev aragetzeh. He says you're patur from mamon in that case, and that's against Rabbi's position, but that's the second position of Tana de Beit Chizkiya. The third position of Tana de Beit Chizkiya is that ben derech yirida ashmiinon, the kamod derech aliyah, just like on the way up, delo nit nashigah gadol the kapara, over there you don't get kapara, you can't go into galut, delo shaklinim imnei mamona, we don't give him money, ulupachrei, and we release him, hakanami derech yirida, so too in derech yirida, afagav the nit nashigah gadol the kapara, even though that shogeg has kapara through galut, you are also patur over there, from paying monetary compensation, liftor mezid nami itzrich. And even in an intentional case, we also will say that you are patur. That is the third principle that Tana de Beit Chizkiya teaches us. Tosfot mentions that there was a girsa, people who learned the opposite way around, that just like by derech yirida you're patur, so too by derech aliyah you should be patur. And he says that's not the correct way to read it. So those are the three principles that derive from Tana de Beit Chizkiya. By dividing it up into three principles, that allows Tosafot on the previous Amud to say that you can accept a portion of Tana de Beit Chizkiya and reject a portion of it. You can accept the fact that Mita Chogigim are Pturim from monetary compensation, but then you can argue with the fact that maybe there is kofar in the case of the pregnant woman that is killed. Right now, next Mishnah. Rotzeach shenitarev ba'acherim. A rotzeach that got mixed up with others, it's not clear who the others are, kulan Pturim. They're all patur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, continue to the kippah. We lock them up in the kippah, as Rashi explains over here, that we incarcerate them, and then we feed them si'orim, we feed them barley, etchetibakeh krisan, until their stomach swells and bursts. Meaning that it's an alternative punishment to a death penalty over here. We know the person is guilty, and we know we need to do something with them. We don't want to set them free. So there is a requirement of viarta rami kirbecha. So here, Beit Din takes the matter into their own hands and says, even though we can't prosecute you al din Torah, we're going to do it in a different manner. We're going to incarcerate you. Rashi says that the kotzino tobi kippah, like it does by kodeshim, has more implications than simple incarceration. It's an incarceration that's not fun, which is that they lock him up in a place he can't move, they feed him certain things, they cause him to basically die from his incarceration. That's Rashi and the Yad Ramon's view of what the kippah is over here. They have slightly different versions of exactly what you do, but the Rambam, on the other hand, says, continuo to other kippah is simply incarceration, and that we incarcerate the murderer because of viarta erami kirbecha, that there's a requirement to take the murderers off the street. And so the Rambam views this as simple incarceration, not as some sort of alternate form of execution that isn't one of the Arba Mitot Beit Din. Your question is obviously what the Gemara is going to have to ask here, which is, it seems like you're doing this to all these people. That means that the other people must be guilty of something, because you wouldn't do this. If the other people were completely innocent, you wouldn't lock them up, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even though you ever would say amongst them. That wouldn't be a reason, because one guilty party's there to hurt all these innocent people. So that means they can't be innocent, and then you have to understand why you can't put them to death. Kol chayvei mitot shenarvu zeh bezeh. If you have multiple people that are subject to death penalties, but different death penalties that get mixed up with each other, nidonim bekala, then you give them all the lowest death penalty that's amongst the group. Because a higher death penalty or a more severe death penalty has subsumed within it the lighter forms of punishment. So if you have someone that's chayav skila and someone that's chayav chenek, then in the end, if you give them both chenek, you've accomplished. You've got both of them have been executed by Beit Din. The one who was supposed to get chenek got chenek. The one who was going to get skila, chenek is subsumed in that, so you did what you needed to do. Haniskalim b'nisrafim, if you have those that were going to be stoned, mixed up with those that were going to be burnt b'sreifa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, nidonim b'skila. This is Rabbi Shimon that we've seen all along. So Rabbi Shimon says that they all get skila, which obviously means he thinks sreifa is more chamur, and skila is the lighter form of punishment. She sreifa chamura, because he thinks sreifa is chamura. Chamim omrim, nidonim b'sreifa, she skila chamura. Chamim disagree and say they all get sreifa, because skila is more chamura. We already dealt with this earlier in the Masechta as to what the reasoning behind each of their positions are. They brought the psukim, they brought different examples of this death penalty being given, and then they compared them and said which is more severe, and then based on which one is more severe, we would assume that's the more severe punishment, and that's how they get the gradations that we have here. Amarle and Rabbi Shimon, ilo lo hayta sreifa chamura, lo nitna lebat kohen shezinta. Because if sreifa wasn't the most severe, then you wouldn't have given it to a bat kohen that has znut. Remember that according to this, it's a situation in which she is a nara hameurasa. The standard punishment for nara hameurasa is skila. Over here, the Torah tells you that a bat kohen who does something worse, which is that aviyahi mechalelet, that she profanes her father, causes her father to be made into chol, that he's also punished, then she gets a more severe punishment, which is sreifa. So Rabbi Shimon says, if you compare the fact that a nara hameurasa normally gets skila, now you're upgrading the bat kohen to sreifa, that shows you that sreifa is more chamura. That all presumes that the situation is by a nara hameurasa, and the fact that you would give sreifa by a nara hameurasa. The Chachamim disagree, and can disagree for one of two reasons. Either that, by the case of nara hameurasa, a bat kohen would get skila, and we wouldn't change it, or the fact that bat kohen is not just by the case of nara hameurasa. Might also apply to a nisua, might also apply to a ketana. In those cases, the punishment would have been chenek. And now you upgrade it to sreifa. Everybody agrees sreifa is more chamor than chenek. And in that way, you don't have the conflict between skila and sreifa. Amru lo, the Chachamim respond to him. Ilu lo hayta skila chamura. If skila wasn't the most severe, lo nitna lemegadeif, or lo oved over that kocharim. That wouldn't have been the punishment for someone who's kofer b'ikar. Someone who does birkat Hashem. Someone who worships avodah zarah is subject to skila. That makes it sound like that is the most severe of punishments. Hanaragim benechnakim. If you have people that are supposed to die by the sword and those that are supposed to die by strangulation mixed up together, Rabbi Shimon Omer b'saif. Again here, Rabbi Shimon disagrees in terms of the hierarchy. He says saif is the more severe than chenek. Chamim amin b'chenek. Chamim say the more severe is saif, the lower one is chenek. And therefore in the case, Rabbi Shimon says you punish by saif, which is the lowest of the four mitzvot Beit Din according to Rabbi Shimon. Chamim say you give chenek, which is the lowest according to them. That also has to do with what they think stam mita is in the Torah. Whether stam mita is chenek or stam mita should be saif, as well as by a ben Noach. That's based on the Tana of the Bnei Menashe. These are all the limudim that we saw earlier. The Mishnah is here, but the Gemara already dealt with most of these issues earlier in terms of the difference of opinion between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Man acherim. So the question that you had on the Mishnah, which is nitarev acherim, who are these acherim that are being mentioned in the Mishnah? Ilim acherim ksherim. If you say these are people that are kasher, pshita, that's very straightforward that you're going to release them. You're not going to incarcerate, you're not going to kill people that are totally innocent because you have a rotzeach amongst them. V'tu, in addition to that, baha, leima, Rabbi Yehuda, konsino tole kippah, over there Rabbi Yehuda would say that you incarcerate them and you put them in these difficult conditions. These are innocent people. Why would you ever do that? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, hacha brotzeach, shlo nigmar dino, shnitarei brotzchim acherim, shnigmar dinan, askinan. That's a case here where we have a murderer whose verdict has yet to be finalized with Rutzchim, other murderers whose verdict has been concluded. Rabbanan Sabre, Ingom Rim Dino Shladam, Ela Bifanav. This is a machlok that we just saw in Baba Kama with regards to a shorni skal, which will come up in 1 second. Do you have to complete a verdict and the sentencing in front of the individual who is being prosecuted? The Chachamim say yes. Then you have to do it. The Yokach Kulam Pturim. Therefore we release everybody. The ones whose verdict was already determined and their sentence was already determined, they should have been put to death over here. But we have another group of individuals whose verdict has yet to be reached. And we can't reach the verdict without them being present. And obviously the situation here is where the Edim already all testified, and the only thing left really to do over here is reach the verdict, and that's why they could possibly reach a verdict if they didn't have to know who the particular individual is. And even if we bring everybody to the court, that's not going to work. Because Rashi says, "Kevin de makrim oto lo avi bifanav." Since we don't know who it is, even if they're all present, that's not called bifanav. Bifanav doesn't just literally mean in front of him. It means that you need to know who the individual that you are reading the verdict about is, and who the individual that you're sentencing is. In this case, you can't do that even if all of these individuals are present. Therefore, you'll never be able to conclude the cases of those murderers that we have yet to reach a verdict about, or we have yet to sentence. And so now we have to release everybody because we can't come to a conclusion, and there's nothing for us to do in this case. Rabbi Yehuda, Mifterino, the Gamrei, Namilo. He just says you can't just release them all and let them go, because the Beit Din has come to the conclusion that all of them are really murderers. That the verdict should have been that this individual was a murderer. We just, for a technicality, can't complain it because of the fact that Shlomo Bifanav. So obviously you can't execute him because you don't have a Gemara Din. On the other hand, Kevin de Rotschininu, Hilka Konsino told the Piakipa, since they are murderers, you gotta do something about this. You can't just let them walk off scot-free. So we do something to incarcerate them, or Viata Rami Kirbecha, even though we can't reach the final verdict that would deem them a murderer in a Torah. Nevertheless, we know they are. We know that that was the conclusion of the case, but we can't do it because of technicality. It's not in front of them. Yehuda says, let's deal with this in a way that doesn't allow them to walk away scot-free, and that's Konsino Tan the Kippa. Now, truthfully, even though the Gemara states this as the position of the Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't disagree over here. Rabbi Yehuda agrees to that principle that the Chachamim are establishing. He just believes that you can't just let them go scot-free because we know they are murderers and they're getting off on a technicality, and that's why it'd be Konsino to the Kippa. Rish Lakish Amar Badam Dukuleyam Alo Plige Debetire. Everybody agrees by a human being if the verdict has to be reached, read, and sentenced in front of that individual. If you don't have that, everybody agrees you are patur. V'acha b'shor shalom nigmar dino shenitarei b'shvarim acherim shen nigmar dinan kamiflige. The situation here is that you're dealing with one shor whose verdict was already concluded. He was a shor on iskal. He got mixed up with other shvarim, other oxen, whose conclusion was not reached. Their verdict was not reached. The conclusion wasn't reached in the case. Rabbanan savrei kemita balim kach mitat ha-shor. The Rabbanan have the hekesh, which is v'shor yisakel v'gam balav yumat. The way that the shor yisakel is treated is the same way that the balim would be put to death. Just like by the balim, the verdict must be done in front of the balim, so too by the shor niskal, the verdict must be done or rendered in front of the animal and the owner of the animal. Over here we can't do that because the animals are mixed up. So that's why you can't bring a conclusion to the case. That's what Reish Lakish says our Mishnah is speaking about. Shor niskal that had a gemara din that's mixed up with other shvarim who are supposed to be stoned, but we didn't reach the verdict with them because they were not bifanav. We can't get them in front of us because we don't know which one is which. Vengum din and din osho shor el bifanav. And since you can't finalize the verdict without that shor being here and knowing which shor it is, hilka kulan p'turim. That's why we release all of them. Yudomer savar kontino tan the kippah. And Yehuda says, no, we incarcerate these shvarim and we basically starve them to death and we're going to kill them in this manner. So the Rabbeinu Tam actually makes an interesting deal out of the Gemara here. It's based on the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Someone wanted to offer up an alternative girsa, but the Rabbeinu Tam defends the girsa that we have here, which is that this situation is b'shor shelo nigmar dino, shenitarei b'shvarim acherim shenigmar dinam kamiflegei. And that's why the Mishnah uses Lashona Patur, implying that they otherwise would have been Chayav. And that's why in this situation, we say that they are all Pturim, which is that we don't bother Beit Din to go ahead and kill all of these Shvarim. But nevertheless, it does not mean that they are Mutar B'Hana'ah. They are also Asurim B'Hana'ah. But the deal we would draw from this is if this was a Shor, Shelo Nigmar Dino, that got mixed up with a bunch of other Shvarim, who are totally mutar, in that case we would say that the situation is mutar, or the way that he phrases it, the way that Reish Lakish would say it is, even if the conclusion was that this was a shor niskal, it was nigmar dino, Omer Reish Lakish, nichbishinu v'ninadu, we should let them mix together, move them around, and then we'll say, call the parish, miruba parish. And then any sample that you would take out of this group, we would assume comes from the rove, and they would be ksherim. And he extrapolates that to inyanei kashrut, mitam zeh ayom erbeinu tam. The near the hatzarir, drusat azev, he says that they be matir, a flock animal that was attacked by a wolf, the memasim b'chol yom, the zevim torfim semina eder, that we have many instances where a wolf comes and attacks one of the sheep in the flock, and then the shepherd successfully saves the animal, and we are matir that animal, even though balei chayim are considered to be significant in and themselves, they should not be batel, berov. Nevertheless, we say that the animal that survived, or the fact that the roeh saved them, and we don't know which one is drusat za'ev, which would be a treifa, we assume that a flock comes from the robe of the flock works sherim, and therefore if we take an animal from here, we assume that it is kasher, v'chaim b'robo fot dorsim. And same thing with an issue where you have birds of prey that come and attack avazim v'tanogolim, the mutarim, that they are mutar, because the robe were not attacked, majority were saved and not attacked, and since it comes from the robe, it is mutar. Similar to the case of shor niskal mixed up with other shvarim, who are mutarim, we say that kol to parish miruba parish, and it's mutar, so to over here, despite the fact that animals are distinct objects, which you usually mean that there is no batelut, that you can't make them batel. Nevertheless, you see from our Gemara that that is the case, they are batel, based on the diok he's making out of our Gemara, and therefore he applies it to dinyanei kashrut as well. And then he goes on to say that the reason we don't just kill the shvarim, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, and put them in kontino tobi kippa, is so that you don't mix up the decision that we make by the shvarim, which would be different than a human being. The decision by human beings would be different than the animals, and therefore we want to make it distinct or clear that this is just a normal case and we're just going to kill out the animals, because then you would think the same thing would be true by people, you would just execute them all. But rather, we continue to do the kippah to show that there is a difficult safek over here, and if it came to human beings, we would not execute the individuals in that case. Rabbeinu Tam then goes on to state another chiddush about shor niskal, which is that a shor niskal only becomes a sur b'hana'ah once it's dead, not while it is alive. The Balei Tosafot over here bring views that disagree with that position of the Rabbeinu Tam. And then at the way end of the Tosafot, he challenges the psak that the Rabbeinu Tam gave with regards to finding a safek drusha in the case where you have it mixed up with the eder. He says, "Mashu pasuk Rabbeinu Tam eder sheish baseachad safek drusha de sharinan mitam dechol parish miruba parish lo itachein." That doesn't make sense. Sheish lesor gzeira shem ikach mina kavua, because he could come and take not something that was parish mina ruba, but take one of them from the fixed grouping over here, and that would be mechsa mechsa, and that would be problematic. If it leaves the flock itself, found with the goy, or somehow it left the group or the other flock, about nesar b'tarovet. If they are mixed together, the tarovet means asur. Uperosh lo amina miruba parish. We don't just assume that the one that comes out of here automatically comes from the rove. Even if you have one out of a thousand in a flock that is a safek trusa, kulam yamutu. They all will be put to death. They all will be considered to be problematic. Although then the Tosafot does back away a little bit and suggests that maybe we could uphold the Rabbeinu Tam's position over here, because maybe animals are different than other cases where we are worried about you making a tarovet and then saying kol de parish miruba parish because of the problem of because animals are animate objects by definition. They're always moving. And so therefore it's very easy to move them around and then have them be called a parish, miruva parish, and no longer be considered that davar kavua. Because we can basically allow them to mix and then move them to a new location so we can remove the issue of called kavua kemeksa meksa dahin. Rava says, Reish Lakish, what you're saying doesn't make so much sense. According to the first way we read the Mishnah, we were talking about human beings. Reish Lakish comes along and says, nobody disagrees with regards to human beings. We're talking about animals. So now, Rava retorts to Reish Lakish's position over here and says the following. Don't we have a qualification of this Mishnah where Amar Rabbi Yossi, Afilu Abba Chalafta Benehem? Even if Abba Chalafta is amongst those individuals, we would still say that the halacha is the same in this Mishnah, whether according to Chamim it's patur, or whether according to Rabbi Yehuda, it means that you continue to the kippah. But what you see from Rabbi Yossi's statement is that we're speaking about human beings and not animals. Because Abu Khalafta obviously is an individual. So that means that you're speaking about humans and not animals, and your explanation of the Mishnah then is not viable because it won't fit with that statement or that qualification of Rabbi Yossi.
And Rashi adds that this problem is not only for Reish Lakish, but even for Shmuel, who originally is playing the Gemara with individuals, because how could you suggest over here that Abba Chalafta, Rabbi Yossi's father, was a Rotzeach, and therefore it's also not viable even in that explanation of Shmuel.
We're going to stop here, and we'll continue tomorrow on the second line down on Pei Amud Aleph with Rava's alternative view of how to explain that phrase in the Mishnah.